Do a little politicking?
I'll press your impudent son bitch.
You don't tell your pappy how to cut the electorate. We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Oh, yes. That's a powerful new force.
Mm-hmm. Think of it, Junior.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9 on this Thursday morning. It's completely full moon out there, so kind of a bright morning, I guess. It will be even brighter, I guess, when the sun comes up. But always nice when we get a full moon out there. But it's definitely almost like a full moon still in Washington D.C. as the werewolves of Doge and everybody else comes out to slash the government one piece at a time, slash regulations at one piece at a time. And one of the things I want to talk about this morning is the slashing of environmental regulations from the new EPA chief. So the Environmental Protection Agency has gotten very, very active in the last few years and making things almost impossible for consumers, making things more expensive for consumers. And the new EPA chief is listing out several different things that he wants to cut in this easing of regulations, I should say, as part of his plan to make things just a little bit easier for Americans. Again, my thing is making things more common sense, right? No one, I think very few people, or would be for, I would say no one, but there's always people out there, right? Very few people would say we don't need any type of environmental regulations. But the thing is can we have common sense ones, right? We don't want our rivers poisoned. We don't want our skies blackened with smog. But at the same time, we don't want to be forced on certain things that's just not backed by science, or things that's just going to be unfeasible, right? That, sure, it may help the environment a little bit, but it's not going to be feasible for the vast majority of Americans, or things that are just pushed by special interest groups. So things like that, and easing the regulations there to help better Americans. So I want to cover that. There's also this crazy story out of a Democratic lawmaker in Illinois, which is Illinois is Illinois, right? The home of Chicago. Well, she's pushing for a bill to legalizing attacks on police for people having mental health episodes. That's right. She wants to make it completely legal for people to attack police officers. No repercussions, no anything. They're having a mental health episode, therefore they can actually attack police officers, and they have every right to do so. Probably no thing of passing, but just one of those crazy stories that we just can't pass up, right? It's just these things kind of, it's like you can't make it up, right? Like these kind of things you can't make up whatsoever. Also, if we have time, we want to talk about more going back to the international realm. We've talked a lot about Marco Rubio in the last couple of days, last week or so, quite often, as he's moving and shaking. You know, you got to give Marco Rubio credit. That guy is all over the place. He is all over the world in visiting people. And now we have a meeting of the G7, which he's going to be a part of. They're going to talk about that as the backdrop of Ukraine saying they're willing to go with a ceasefire, which was just recently announced. And now they got to work it out with Russia on what a ceasefire may look like. So what would that entail? What would that actually be? But Ukraine says they are open to it. And this is as Russia is now saying, this just happened, this came out about 30 minutes ago, saying that Russia is saying that they've taken or retaken the biggest town in the Kursk region, so over there in Ukraine. Of course, that comes after Ukraine had multiple drone strikes, multiple drones in and around Moscow that most of them were shot down, but after that just happened. And so, of course, you know, this is a war going on, so not surprising there. As the United States has lifted its ban on military aid. We talked about that just the other day as part of our talks with Ukraine. And Ukraine said they're looking to aim towards peace. We then said, okay, we will resume our military aid to you. But that means that aid is its days are numbered. Because we need to, at this point, and I am no fan of giving them aid, right? If you listen to the show quite often, you know that I have no desire to give them any money whatsoever. But at this point, just from a perspective of how to get to a ceasefire, that's how we hold any kind of skin in the game, is to give them some kind of military aid until we get to the ceasefire. If we just pulled out everything right now, then there would be no incentive for Russia to come to the table. So that's how we have a little bit of skin in the game, and we get to direct it. Right at the end of the day, we get to really make the terms. That's why we can talk to Ukraine, we can talk to Russia, and it's really going to be a negotiation between us and Russia. What we can do that Russia wants, what we can do with our own interests now in Ukraine. With mineral rights and things like that, that all kind of go together. Sometimes it's hard for us to get to a third story in our 1 hour, but hopefully we'll get to that. If not, you got a little bit of a teaser right there. Okay, we're gonna go ahead and take our first break right here, and when we get back, also if we have time, there's crazy flooding potential in Southern California. Right after the wildfires, and I don't know. I don't know if divine intervention is something to be of said for that area, but man, it's like apocalyptic. You just burn everything and then flood everything. It's like, I mean, I'm not saying that there's any kind of divine intervention or higher power that's doing that, but kind of scary, kind of apocalyptic things going on over there. if not, you add earthquakes to it. Man, it's like it's not the best place right now. All right, but those are the things we're going to talk about. As always, if you're going to call in during the break, number 601-879-0002. We are, of course, live streaming on Rumble and YouTube, so you can if you do call in, we can have those conversations on the break on those platforms. But go ahead and keep it tuned here to the full story on WYAB 103.9. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9. As we go ahead and get into our first story regarding the relaxing of certain EPA regulations. So this is, again, something that Donald Trump has talked about on the campaign trail, and something that he said this is going to be better for Americans to able to reduce these hefty regulations and policies that have been a hallmark of the prior administration. So the head of the Environmental Protection Agency announced a series of actions Wednesday to roll back the landmark environmental regulations, including rules on pollution from coal-fired power plants, climate change, and electric vehicles, to what he calls the most consequential day of deregulation in American history. So that's EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin said in an essay in the Wall Street Journal, quote, "We are driving a dagger through the heart of climate change religion and ushering in America's golden age." Of course, copying Donald Trump's very same words. And it's interesting there that he would say the climate change religion, because it brings me back to a book written by the great legal scholar Robert Bork called Slouching Towards Gomorrah. It was a book, I think, written in the early 90s. And one of the things he talks about, obviously, what he talked about is that America is not becoming the shiny beacon on the hill. Instead, it is slouching towards Gomorrah, the immoral city from the Bible that was destroyed by God in the Old Testament, from Sodom and Gomorrah. But in there, he talks about how people as a whole need some kind of religion. They need to be able to believe in something almost wholeheartedly and have complete faith in it, even if there's nothing to support it, or if what's to support it is very weak or can go either way, right? And so, obviously, a lot of things about actual religion is that way, right? There's a lot of things you can't prove in Christianity or any religion, and that's where they talk about where faith comes in. Well, the same thing happens with others when they don't have that religion, right? When they want to call themselves so-called atheists, they usually have some kind of belief that they almost believe in like a religion. They believe so much in it that it's almost their life. And there's a couple different things that people fall in under. And one of those that Robert Bork talked about was this environmental religion, where they will not accept any other hypotheses to the opposite. It is going to be this, and they believe it. They will not listen to anything else. They can't consider anything else, is that this is what it has to be, and they're going to try to legislate it, right? And that's the problem. Because when you do it, when you believe so fervently in something that you treat it like a religion, you essentially are making laws like a religion, like a country would that's based in religion, right? Like your Muslim countries, that you're forcing these ideas onto people that may not believe in the same thing that you do. And that's something that's been a big thing with the prior Democratic administrations. But if these relaxing of regulations is approved, it has to go through a lengthy process first that includes public comment. The Trump administration's actions will eliminate trillions of dollars in regulatory costs and hidden taxes, according to Zeldin, which will lower the cost of living for American families and reduce prices for such essentials such as buying a car, heating your home, and operating a business. He wrote in that essay, "Our actions will also reignite American manufacturing, spreading economic benefits to communities. Energy dominance stands as the center of America's resurgence." In all, Zeldin said he is rolling back 31 different environmental rules. Zeldin said he and President Donald Trump support rewriting the agency's 2009 finding, for instance, that planet-warming greenhouse gases endanger public health and welfare. The Obama-era determination under the Clean Air Act is the legal underpinning of a host of climate regulations from motor vehicles, power plants, and other pollution sources. So essentially saying that humans are responsible for climate change. And again, there is alternate hypotheses out there, right? There is one that says that humans are a contributor to it. There is another that says this is just the natural transition of things, right? The Earth has multiple periods of hot and cold. And obviously we haven't been, humans haven't had recorded history, or at least remaining recorded history, that says it's been otherwise. But we do know it's been much, much, much hotter on this planet. And it's been much, much colder on this planet too. It's quite a dynamic planet, if you will, when it comes to climate. And part of that, I've always believed, is a little bit with hubris of people, humans, thinking that we are so powerful that we can actually change the climate. I mean, how full of yourself do you have to be to actually believe that? Because you see just the awesome power of nature, that it is more powerful than our strongest atomic bomb ever, right? You look at an explosion of a volcano, right? And the fact that one explosion of a volcano, a large volcano, can completely cool the Earth for years, right? It is crazy how powerful nature is. Like I said, much more so than anything we could have ever built. And, so this idea that greenhouse gases that we have created, and we also know that greenhouse gases have occurred in the past, right? Before humans ever existed as well. Or at least according to rocks and ice samples and all these other things that we try to look back, right? Of course, again, that's also hypotheses, I guess. We weren't actually there. We try to piece it together from evidence that we find, but we don't truly, truly know. It's one of those things that's how science works, right? Is that we always look at different hypotheses, and there can be ones that you can't prove or disprove, right? And that's where I talk about the religion comes in. They have to have faith in their belief that it's us. It has to be us, right? We are all powerful beings. We must be the ones that do this. So again, to me, that is something where administrations can differ. If one administration believes that science, more power to them, right? But if a different administration comes in and they think the science says something else, well, that's their prerogative as well. So environmentalists and climate scientists call the endangerment finding a bedrock of U.S. law and say any attempt to undo it will have a little chance of success. And that little thing there is interesting, because environmentalists and climate scientists are not lawyers. And again, there's difference between, oh, we think it's this, right? But again, we're talking something about policy and courts. And especially the Supreme Court in the last few years, rightfully so, has been very hesitant to get itself involved in politics, right, or in creating disagreements on policy, right? They're not here for policy; they're here to say the law. And an executive branch, an executive member, can undo certain things of another one. Again, if they believe the science is different, you can argue the science says otherwise, but you're not in power, right? Your people aren't in power. They have their scientists that says this. You have your scientists that says that. Well, at the end of the day, then it just matters who's controlling it, who gets to decide how those regulations happen. As who was it? Was it Clinton who said elections have consequences, right? Well, there you go. So David Doniger, a climate expert at the Natural Resources Defense Council, which is an extreme environmental group that seems to just sue for everything, they say, in the face of overwhelming science, again, according to them, it is impossible to think that the EPA could develop a contradictory finding that could stand up in court. Again, to your science, to scientists that you listen to, right? And again, because it's their religion, right? Because they look at this, they cannot be convinced otherwise, right? You cannot convince a Muslim that Jesus was in fact the Christ, right? Can't do it. You can say, oh, he's very important, but you're not going to convince him. Just like you're not going to convince a Christian that Muhammad was the supreme prophet, right? You're not going to do it. It's just against their religion. It's against their religion, too, to listen to any other scientist that doesn't have their view. And that's one of the things. I mean, that's a problem with Democrats as a whole. And we saw that in this last election, right, is that they have focused too much on their small little groups. Right. They don't see outside of that. They stay in their little enclaves, their little liberal enclaves, and they don't listen to any outside perspectives. And of course, if you don't ever listen to other science, if you don't look at other scientists, then of course you're going to say overwhelming evidence. It's overwhelming. How can you possibly see it? Well, that's because you're not looking at the other science, right? You believe this so wholeheartedly and so fervently, you refuse to look at any alternate hypotheses. And again, that's fine when you're in power, right? But you're not in power. Someone else is, and their science says otherwise. That's the bottom line here. So in a related action, Zeldin said the EPA will rewrite a rule restricting air pollution from fossil fuel fired power plants and a separate measure restricting emissions from cars and trucks. Zeldin and the Republicans, label the car rule as an electric vehicle mandate. So to get rid of that, where 50% of vehicles in the next 30 years have to be, by 2030, not next 30 years. I keep saying 30 because I keep thinking it's crazy that 2030 is actually, right around the corner. it seems like it's so far off, but it's not. That 50% of cars have to be electric, right? So that's something, again, that doesn't even consider the science and consumers. So like I said, just the electric car, this mandate of electric cars, being half of all new cars and trucks being zero emission, right? They say zero emission, they don't say electric. So theoretically it could be hydrogen powered cars, but those are very, very few and far between. So really that's electric. And I myself have nothing against electric cars, right? I think electric cars can offer benefits. I think they have their place. However, to force them on Americans to essentially, you see it right in California, where they say all new cars must be zero emission, just has unnecessary expense, and it doesn't really go to the problem,
right? Electric cars, we know, right, that obviously they have to be charged. So they have to get their power from somewhere. Electricity just doesn't pop up, right? And you have a thing like renewable energy, which I'm a big fan of, right? Solar, windmills, things like that. The problem with those sources of alternative energy or clean energy is that they're not very efficient in that it takes a lot from them to make a little bit of power, right? It takes a lot of solar panels to make a little bit of power. And if everybody's on electric cars, those types of things cannot produce enough power to actually fuel them. And by fuel them, I mean give them juice, right? There's just not enough there. So you have to go back to other types of power, which is natural gas, which is generally clean, but you need more. But they want to restrict that too, because how do you get natural gas? Through fracking, which they don't like. So, you know, they don't have any solutions. They just throw these things out there. Not only to mention the fact that most of these electric vehicles have very rare earth minerals. Some of the things we're trying to get from Ukraine, mind you. But these things are mostly strip mined. They're very, very bad on the environment. Right now, a lot of them are coming from places like China, where they pollute the rivers. It's a very destructive type of mining to get these rare earth minerals that it takes quite a bit of them to do to make these vehicles. And so, again, to me, electric cars is something that people should freely choose, right? If you like what electric cars can do for you, if you like the fact you don't have to do oil changes, and you like that, you know, you like the instant torque, you like not having to get gas and just put in your charging up at your home if you have a home, then more power to you. But to say it's better for the environment, that's just not true. Especially all the advancements that we've come up with in emissions regulations for vehicles. In fact, you know, that's one of the things, you know, I will give credit for, right, with the EPA over the last 40 years is the type of emissions regulations that they've had on vehicles. And I come from this as a person who used to be an automotive journalist. I used to cover cars all the time. And I see the advancements that we've had since the first institution of environmental regulations in the 1970s. And how far cars have come. And cars have pretty well adapted to these regulations. But these regulations that the EPA has put on over those years were reasonable. It wasn't this crazy number, right? Or arbitrary number. Say, hey, you must have so much miles per gallon. Well, that doesn't make sense. What does make sense is the emissions amount, right? How much emissions comes out of the tailpipe. And to limit that. And then, you know, industry is able to catch up to that. Normally, there's a little bit of time where the cars suck because they don't know quite how to do it. But then we innovate and we create cars. And now cars today are faster. They're more efficient. They have less emissions than any car from the 1960s. And I come from that with a person who owns a 1966 Beetle. You know, I can tell you, you drive that thing, right? It smells of gas. It's very, very slow compared to modern cars. They've come such a long way from that time. And a big part of that is reasonable EPA regulations, right? Not no EPA regulations, but reasonable ones. And they've come up. But also, too, like I said, understanding the reality of the situation, that emissions as car emissions was a big factor to smog, right? Smog, it's not necessarily about the greenhouse gases, but things like smog are, we know, bad for your breathing, right? Not good for you. And cities in America used to be very much full of smog. If you look at old video from our old film from the 60s and the 70s, you see literally places like New York City, which still has it to some extent, just smog covering the city, or Los Angeles, right? Smog just covering the city, which we have cleaned up quite a bit, right? Both through vehicle emissions and reasonable emissions on power plants. It's not getting rid of them, right? It's not just saying, you know what, we're just going to get rid of it. We're not going to have a solution for it. We're just going to get rid of it. Instead of, hey, maybe we can work on making that coal plant or making this other type of plant more efficient at the same time, cutting down on emissions, right? And it's, to me, it's not about It's not about greenhouse gases. It's about health and safety. The big time polluter of all of this is China. They have zero regulations on them. They just openly pollute with no regard. And I was in South Korea not that long ago. I was in Seoul, which is a big city, and there's just heavy, heavy smog one morning. It's smog I had never seen. And granted, growing up in Mississippi, I've never lived in a big city like Seoul. But I have been to big cities, right? I've been to big cities quite a bit. I've been in New York and places like that, right? But man, going there and seeing that much smog, and they say it comes from China. You know, I don't know if it's their own or China, but man, it was very much an eye opener for me, right? And that, you know, I've been lucky enough that I never had to live through smog like that. And again, that comes from reasonable regulations, being smart, right? So we're not talking about getting rid of the EPA. I think it has a legitimate place to make sure companies aren't, again, poisoning our rivers, right? Unnecessarily putting out smog out there, looking for the health of America. Again, part of what Donald Trump's doing is make America healthy again. So let's focus on regulations that do that, but not unnecessarily do things on science that could go either way, right? Not on greenhouse gases, but on safety and health. And again, common sense. You know, we talk about this electric car and forcing, you know, half of electric cars to be zero emission, which means electric. Like I said, 9 out of 10 times means electric. When you look at that, and as someone who's lived in places, you know, like in cities, right? I've lived in DC, for instance, where you don't have a garage, right? You got to park on the street. Where are you going to charge it? Where are people going to charge these things? Not to mention the extreme cost. So these things aren't cheap, these electric cars. And they're essentially throwaway, right? It's, you know, one thing I will say about my 1966 Beetle is that it still runs. It can be rebuilt over and over again for almost eternity. As long as the body doesn't rust out, it will always be there. And it's always affordable to be able to rebuild that thing to keep it going. You can't say the same thing about an electric car. Once that battery is gone, it's going to cost three times more than the cost of the car to replace the battery. And again, those batteries just can't be thrown away. They are toxic. They are toxic to the environment. Again, if we're talking about environmental, and again, I care more about the safety part of the Environmental Protection Agency. We don't want those batteries just going to landfills. They can't just go to landfills, right? That'll poison our land if that happens. So they have to be stored somewhere. Maybe one day we'll have a way to destroy them safely. But right now, there's not a whole lot of options for them. I mean, sometimes you can refurbish them, but you can only do that so many times. And then you have this toxic, you know, this toxic piece of a vehicle that we have to do something with. And so there's that problem. And then again, the fact that, well, if you don't have a garage, what are you going to do? Like you got to try to charge at your work, hope your work has a charger, I guess. Or you just have to stop by the grocery store every day where they have a charger there and spend an hour at the grocery store every single day to get it charged. I mean, it's such a pain, until we can get the technology there where you can charge it just as fast as a gas vehicle. Maybe one day we'll get there in that regard, but, there's just so many things that, again, not creating that choice for the consumer, and it's not really based in science, right? It's based in it sounds good, right? Oh, zero emission vehicle, it sounds good. When vehicles right now, like I said, their emissions are phenomenal as far as what they actually put out to the put out in the environment because of reasonable regulations, right? We see it with diesel trucks too, right? I know a lot of the truck drivers hate the fact that they got to put that material, it's escaping me, that you got to put in the truck, right? That helps with the emission, all new trucks. I know you hate to do that, but from a environmental standpoint, it's very, and from a design standpoint, it is brilliant, right? We just inject this fluid into the exhaust, and it kind of neutralizes the output of the emissions. That's a beautiful design. I know it costs a little bit more, but from a design perspective, from an engineering perspective, it's quite ingenious. And that's the kind of things that we should be looking at, right? Not having to upset the apple cart, right? And saying we have to just get rid of gas vehicles. Well, no, that doesn't make any sense, because gasoline in and of itself is a very efficient type of energy source. It's something that is very easily, that can very easily be, you get a lot of power at a little bit of juice, right? Compared to electricity. Of course, this is all going over the fact that something that no one really wants to consider, which is nuclear power, which is, as far as emission wise, no emission outside of water vapor, is the only emission you get from a nuclear plant. Now, nuclear plants do have nuclear waste, which is something that is, that has to be managed and put in caves, because again, you just can't throw that away. Maybe one day we'll be able to inject it into space. That's my hope. You know, maybe SpaceX can have nuclear reactor waste shooting into space. Who knows? You know, that's something that's not really talked about when they talk about clean energy, you know, everybody's afraid of meltdown, all this other stuff, even though that's pretty rare. It's just not talked about. And like I said, I have especially seen this play out from a liberal standpoint, from my time living in Hawaii. So in Hawaii, and I've told this story before on the show, but in Hawaii, we had on the island of Oahu, I should be more specific, which is where Honolulu is. If you've been to Waikiki, you've been to Oahu. But on the island of Oahu, they essentially had, they had three power plants essentially on the island. Okay. They had four at one time, but then they had, essentially two coal power plants, natural gas power plant, and they have one that burns the trash that doesn't produce a lot of power, but produces some power. Well, the Hawaii legislature, in all of its liberal wisdom, said, we're going to get rid of coal power plants by a certain day, and by a certain date. And it was like 2023 or something, or 2022 maybe. I can't remember the exact year. And so that year comes, and by law, they have to shut down the coal power plants, and they did. The problem is, they had nothing to replace it. So, energy, which was already expensive in Hawaii, because you have to ship it in. The coal, you had to ship in. The natural gas, we have to ship in. So, it was already expensive. So, to give you an example, on a three-bedroom house that I lived in Hawaii, my energy bill was about $365 a month. Pretty expensive, even for then. They shut down those coal power plants, went from about 365 to closer to 700, and almost doubled. And it's crazy to think about, right? $700 a month just in energy, right? Just in electricity cost. Not to mention the fact that so many of the people drive electric cars in Hawaii, that puts even more strain on the already weak system. And then a place like Hawaii Electric Company has been responsible for fires throughout the islands. That was, in fact, they were responsible for the fire in Lahaina and Maui. So, again, they have these ideas, but nothing to replace it. They built a few windmills on Oahu, but Oahu is such a small island, and it's so rugged, it's hard to build windmills. And then they couldn't agree on the windmills either. There was a fight over that. I don't want to get too detailed in Hawaii state politics, but that was another big one as well. So again, it's just, you have all of these things, but they're not based in reality. They're not based in common sense, right? And that's where it all kind of circles back to, is having common sense. It's something that has been lacking in the last few administrations. And that is something we need to get to, right? The EPA needs to have common sense regulations, right? The regulations based on, we don't want smog in our air. We don't want poison chemicals in our waterways. We want clean drinking water. We don't want our ground poisoned. Those types of things, right? We don't want smog in the air. We want to be able to breathe and drink in our environment safely. That's what the EPA should be based on, not on science of greenhouse gases and all these other things. that, again, can be argued a different way. And then forcing things based on that that don't make common sense to the people and actually hurt the consumer and hurt business. That doesn't make any sense. With these new tariffs that we're putting on, we need to develop business to be able to make up for those tariffs, because people are going to hurt with these tariffs. So we need to invest back into America, and we need to make it easy to invest in America while still watching for the safety of Americans and the health of Americans, you know, from a baseline. But outside of that, creating an environment where that can happen, where that can be built, an environment based or this an agency based in common sense. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take another break right here. When we get back, I want to talk about the crazy law that an Illinois lawmaker wants to make where you can attack police officers. If you want to call in during the break, number 601-879-0002, but keep it tuned to the full story on WYAB 103.9. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9. So I'm on this text chat with a lot of the other hosts here on WYAB, Kim Wade, Jameson, you name it. We're all in this text chat. And everyone, we always share stories. And this is a crazy one that someone shared last night that I figured I had to cover. And it's one that's relatively short but crazy. So an Illinois lawmaker has introduced a bill that critics say will make it legal for anyone experiencing a mental health episode to attack police officers. Literally legal, or a defense to it. So Democratic State Representative Lisa Davis, who's an attorney in the law office of the Cook County Public Defender's Office, so she's a public defender, introduced House Bill 3458 in February. Under the terms of the legislation, the bill would provide that it is a defense to aggravated battery when the individual battered is a peace officer and the officer responded to an incident in which the officer interacted with a person whom a reasonable officer could believe was having a mental health episode, and the person with whom the officer interacted has a documented mental illness and acted abruptly. So again, it's a defense to aggravated battery, and that's actually picked up two co-sponsors. An aggravated battery in Illinois is when someone attacks a person who they know to be a peace officer, or community policing volunteer, fireman, private security officer, or correctional institution employee. And interestingly, it only covers police officers or peace officers. It doesn't cover firemen or anything else. And funny thing is, you know, just from a defense standpoint, is that, well, if someone's having a mental health episode, then they may not be competent anyway, because part of the law says you have to know they're a peace officer. So if they're having a break from reality, they wouldn't even know that person they're attacking is a peace officer to begin with. So there's missing that specific intent element. So from just a purely legal standpoint, you don't really need it. Again, all this would create is the fact that police, if someone is having a mental health episode, they would just let them have it, right? They're not going to do anything. Just let them act like, let them just act crazy and maybe just carding people off. They're too afraid that they could be attacked and nothing can happen. But again, from a legal standpoint, you don't even need it. But that's the idiocracy of these Democratic lawmakers. They don't think through things, right? The fact that there's already a defense to this, if you are having a mental health episode, which is lack of mental responsibility for a specific intent element, right? That's right there. You don't even need a new law for that. But they do it just because they hate police officers, and they really want to show how much they hate police officers. And why you would ever be a police officer in Chicago blows my mind. I wouldn't touch it with a 30-foot pole to be a police officer there. And I've been in Chicago the last couple of years, and they don't really. They don't have any support, so people just kind of run amok around there. Because why even risk your life or your career? All right, we have to take our last break right here. When we get back, we'll do This Day in History. But keep it tuned to the full story on WYAB 103.9. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the full story on WYAB 103.9. As we get to This Day in History, as always, we may run a little over on the radio, but this will be on the live stream you can catch on those platforms. So on this day, March 13th, 1781, was the day astronomer William Herschel discovered the planet Uranus, or Uranus, depending on how you want to say it, which expanded the known boundaries of our solar system for the first time since ancient history. So before this day, every planet in the night sky had been known since ancient times. Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, all visible to the naked eye. But on March 13th, 1781, from his backyard observatory in Bath, England, William Herschel noticed something unusual. Using a homemade telescope, he spotted what he first thought was a comet or distant star. But as he tracked its movement, it became clear that this was no ordinary planet or no ordinary object. It was a new planet orbiting the sun far beyond Saturn. For the first time in human history, our understanding of the solar system had expanded. At first, Herschel wanted to name it Georgium Sidus after King George III, which is probably not the catchiest name. But after some debate, astronomers settled on Uranus, which is the name of the Greek god of the sky. Actually, the Roman god of the sky, the Roman name for the Greek god of the sky. Uranus remains one of the most mysterious planets in our solar system, as it is the only one that rotates on its side, possibly due to a massive collision long ago. It also has 13 faint rings and a blue-green color caused by methane gas in the atmosphere. And despite all our advancement, only one spacecraft, Voyager 2, has ever flown past it, which was back in 1986. So, next time you look in the sky, just know, when you look at it today, 240 years ago today, someone spotted Uranus for the first time. All right, that's all I have for you guys today. We'll see you again tomorrow on Friday. But until then, my name is Matthew Bishop, and you've heard the full story.
Bye, 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 baby, bye, bye.